Greetings. You are now listening to the McAfee Croncast. Stand by for your hosts, Brian Murphy and Doug Bruzzoni. They will be discussing your favorite baseball squadron, the San Francisco Giants. Take it away, Brian and Doug.
Okay, it is Monday, May 23rd, and Doug, I don't know if you know this or not, but the Giants, they only lost one game. They didn't lose at all this past week. They didn't face Jake Arrieta. They won all their games this past week, and they were magnificent. Going three, I'm sorry, they went 5-1. They did face Jake Arrieta, we should say, but the Giants beat the Cubs and swept the Padres on the road to finish something they haven't done in 103 years. If you didn't know this, folks. Not since 1913 have the Giants gone 7-0 on the road to sweep a road trip, and they wound up doing it finally, as you all predicted that this would be the team to go and break a 103-year-old record. But and they beat the Cubs, so I'm wrong.
I would like to point out not only did they beat the Cubs. They beat the Cubs on Sunday Night Baseball, which is we had discussed just recording this podcast before the Sunday night game and saying, well, and then the Giants lost Sunday night because it was that inevitable.
I mean, they don't. You can read the entire article on the website about how just piss poor the Giants are on the old SN on the old SNB. Yeah, I don't really know what to say other than, well, there's probably a pretty good explanation for that, and that is Madison Bumgarner was pitching. So that probably had a lot to do with it, but, let's just go through the week real quick. I'm pretty excited to talk about this Cubs series. It was pretty great, but we definitely should talk about that the Giants went into San Diego and in a three-game series. Not only did they sweep the Padres, but they outscored them 10-3 for the series, which is pretty great. The Giants finished their road trip, the seven-game road trip. They haven't scored more than 5 runs since the beginning of May. And so in the meantime, really, they're just shutting teams down with pitching. And on the first game of the series for this week, 5-1. And it was the old Matty, old Madison Bumgarner, going in and just shutting him down, and just another fun, rollicking time. Sometimes these Madison Bumgarner starts defy analysis. This was a complete game where he struck out 11 hitters. He was fantastic.
Yeah, he was incredible. The only drama in this game by the end of it was whether he would pitch a shutout or not. Which, you know, he didn't because Matt Kemp is a jerk. At least Matt Kemp being a jerk is only, at this point, affecting whether Madison Bumgarner gets a shutout and not whether the Giants win a game.
It was the best way to lose a shutout. No, it wasn't the best way, but it was it was pretty fun. If you didn't see the game, I kind of encourage you to go watch it because you're like, oh, he's going to throw a shutout. And Matt Kemp destroyed the ball. He hit it to where Pat Burrell hit his home run, 6 years ago now, that was in 2011, 5 years ago, off the Western Metal Supply Building. It was incredible, and it was a Matt Kemp basically being like, hey, I still have a little bit left in my bat, but Madison Bumgarner, there's too many ma sounds going on right now. This is the problem. Bumgarner threw 108 pitches and really just was cruising for pretty much the entire night. There's not really too much more analysis to go with that game. Brandon Crawford had a big game, probably his biggest game of the season, 2-for-3, and he had 5 RBI. He had a monster home run, and Petco is a very hard place to hit home runs, and he hit it to dead center field. He crushed it. off of a high fastball. It was impressive, and it was I believe it was a 3-0 fastball, in fact. So it was the second time in about 2 weeks that the Giants have sort of been given the green light on 3-0 pitches, and which is a nice strategy with baseball. You just got to change it up every so often.
Yeah. Hey, if the Giants want a homer on 3-0 pitches, I think more power to them. The team should allow that.
That's what I've been thinking. I'm like, why haven't they been doing this all the time? This is great. It works every time.
So there's not a lot you can really criticize the front office for, but I think that has been a mistake. So it's good to see it corrected.
Just rake them over the coals. When Bobby Evans takes that exit interview, just grind it right into this open wound. 3-0, man. And Hunter Pence, he went 3-for-4. He had a great game, and that's actually not great because the rest of the week he kind of disappears with a hamstring injury, which we'll get to in a moment. But it was a good continuation of the road trip. And going to San Diego, and you kind of expect that these games are going to be pesky. And as we roll right into game two, and the Giants win that one 2-1, that was sort of a game where you're like, okay, maybe this is the game where it kind of reverses and is what it is. But this is actually the game where the only runs were off of Hunter Pence's bet. I was jumping the gun here. but this was a game where, in the second inning, Johnny Cueto gives up a run, and then that's it. The rest of the game, the Padres do not score, and Johnny Cueto finishes the game. It's another complete game. 9 innings, 8 strikeouts for Johnny Cueto. And again, Hunter Pence's home run being the lone runs of the game for the Giants. And this was sort of, it was a nail biter, but not one that goes all the way down to your knuckles. Just that's how in command Johnny Cueto was.
Yeah, he was really good. And Drew Pomeranz was really good. Pomeranz has been having pretty quietly, of course, because he's on the Padres, so it's impossible to notice him. But he's been having a great season. Yeah. And Cueto's been having a great season. So it was the sort of thing that you go into and you sort of half expect a pitcher's duel, and then you half expect it to be a 14-12 game just because baseball likes to laugh at you. But in this case, yeah, the duel matched up to the billing. Cueto was fantastic through a complete game. 8 strikeouts, 2 walks, only 4 hits. And Pomeranz was great.
Yeah.
Just a little less great, and he made one bad pitch to Hunter Pence. That Hunter Pence took that swing on it, by the way. That was a total Hunter Pence swing. It went, the other way. He kind of hacked at it. It was high. You thought there's no way this is going to be anything, and then it just kept sailing out of the yard.
It's kind of like this is a really bad analogy, but this is where I make my living, coming up with bad analogies. It looks like it's the swing where it looks like he's throwing over or throwing down a bookcase. Like it's kind of starts high and it kind of slaps down in a way, but it has this tremendous power. Or maybe it's like he's throwing a that's what it is. It's like he's throwing a sack on someone to kidnap them. There we go. But Drew Pomeranz, I want to point out, because you point out this tremendously, a 1.96 ERA so far in 46 innings with 56 strikeouts for the season. So we've got a little better than Jay Happ action going on with Drew Pomeranz. And it's sort of one of those things where, yeah, who? Him? and you have the Petco Park factor, I'm sure, coming into it, but he's had 2 decent seasons in Oakland coming into this one. He's only 27 years old. Very strange. But, hey, good for the Padres to find someone who's good and not injured for their starters.
Yeah, I'm excited to see who they end up trading him for at the deadline. That'll be big for the franchise.
I doubt he'll be part of the TV show Pitch Canon. I doubt they'll do that. Folks, we're going to, I don't know if you know this, folks, but Fox, the television network, they're doing a TV show about a baseball team that comes out this fall. And it's sort of, it's not going to be Moneyball. It's going to be a little bit more West Wing. in terms of what it does behind the scenes, but it's about the first female pitcher in Major League Baseball and the team that she's on. She's on the San Diego Padres. And I tried to get the creator of that show on the podcast to do an interview with us for the Padres Know Your Foe segment, because my reasoning was that no one actually cares or knows about the real Padres. So we could, it would be a lot more fun to do an analysis of the fake Padres team and basically be like, what's your thinking behind this Padres team? Did you guys in the room come up with all 25 of your guys? Do you have a general sense of what the team is like? And then what their version, the TV show version of the Giants and the Dodgers might be going forward. So, because it would stink if like the Giants were bad in this show. I think it'd be better if they were the villain, to be honest. But what do I know? but the creator of the show, he's a big Mets fan. So I don't know what this means for the Giants going forward. I don't know what it means for the Padres, other than them having a TV show where that's sort of based on them is the most interesting thing about the San Diego Padres, the real life ones.
That is absolutely true.
and their stadium's pretty nice. So like it's a nice place to go watch a Giants game. So we'll go into the final game of the series here, and that is a 3-1 win, and that was one where the Giants scored one run in a few innings and let the Padres scored early and then sort of hung on for the whole game in that sense. But it was Jeff Samardzija, 8 innings, 8 strikeouts, 3 hits and no walk. So it wasn't like there was an abundance of base runners. Again, not really in doubt. This was a game, the biggest problem was, Jeff Samardzija is not going to be able to throw a complete game. Well, that just stinks. They could have had all those complete games in a row, and that didn't wind up happening. But it was another fantastic, dominant start from him. And Joe Panik went 4-for-5, and Brandon Crawford continued his hot series. James Shields for the Padres, let's give it to him. He pitched all right too. He had 7 strikeouts.
Yeah, he was good. You know, it was another well-pitched game. Shields has been better this year than last year too. His ERA is down to 3.07. He's pitched 58 2/3 innings and only walked, he's walked 22, which is not great. Well, he's been better. my thesis that he's been better based on ERA did not hold up to any sort of look at the peripherals.
He doesn't look tremendously better stuff-wise from this. He looks the same as last year, so this could just be a better pitch selection on his part.
Yeah. But, he was able to be crafty and kind of get the Giants out for a while, but they clawed for a couple of runs. Brandon Crawford hit another homer, and they kind of came through, and Jeff Samardzija just pitched 8 great innings. And, at some point, there is that temptation to sort of take credit away from the Giants because they are playing the Padres, who are the Padres of Major League Baseball teams. you have to give it to them. This is a team full of players who do have a lot of talent. And the Giants just shut them down the whole series. Their pitching was fantastic. And if the biggest demerit is that Jeff Samardzija only went 8 innings instead of 9, then, and some of that, by the way, was about getting Santiago Casillas some work.
Yes, he needed it. The bullpen needed it. They had been off for several days.
So good news about the next day.
Right. But the other that's a great point, actually, about the Padres. I here's my sense watching them. I don't know who anyone is on the team, and I don't know if they have any talent, but it seems like they're playing hard. And they seem like they're not sort of just tanking it. They seem like I have some idea of what they're doing. They don't have top level talent coming through, but everybody on that team is solid. Okay. Like you're not looking at I don't recall looking at any of the players and going like, how is that a major league hitter? And I think that's because Melvin Upton Jr. is somehow not a terrible baseball player anymore. That helps a lot.
Yeah, he just had to get out of Atlanta. I think right. That was the key.
And like occasionally choke up so that he's not just swinging long and wide on breaking balls away. That seemed like another way of getting him out. And that long swing you could bust him into. But in any case, I think we're just used to, no matter what the status of the Padres, them always being tough to play for whatever reason. And the Giants kind of made it look easy this time around. it was sort of a far cry from when the Padres came in before. That series was still a little more difficult. But the pitching, this turn through the rotation, the top three starters, it was three aces. Just absolutely dominant. And yeah, like you said, we could just say, oh, it's the Padres. Or we could look at, no, it's three guys pitching in a groove right now. It's not surprising that Madison Bumgarner comes in and has a fantastic start. And now the Padres are going to be rolling into town. So hopefully the Giants can keep this going, because by the time they leave San Diego after that 3-1 victory, it's an 8-game winning streak, which in the era of Bruce Bochy managing the Giants has only happened. They had an 8-game winning streak last year, but it's very rare. Bruce Bochy teams in general don't tend to go, you know, most baseball teams don't usually go on 8-game or longer winning streaks, but and the Giants that Bruce Bochy has had to manage in his tenure, it's just not been a reality that they could necessarily run off 8 in a row so often. But this is a case where they got good turn through the entire rotation, and the offense hasn't been that great, so it wasn't actually a great turn, it was a fantastic turn through the rotation, because the offense is not popping the way that they kind of expected.
Yeah, absolutely. The pitching, you know, in the part of the early season, the offense is carrying the team a little bit, and now the pitching has sort of come around and decided, yeah, you know, Johnny Cueto had those like 5 or 6 run innings sometimes. What if he just didn't do that anymore?
Right. They basically, so Cueto was looking at video and he was like, I should stop doing that.
But yeah, they have three aces at the top of the rotation, at least the way they're pitching right now. That's what they have, which is incredible. And it's really fun to watch.
What was not fun to watch though, this is a perfect segue into this Cubs series, Friday, May 20th. I mean, if you've blacked out the date, I'm going to tell you, let's relive this painful game. It's the worst game that the Giants played this week in a lot of ways.
A lot of ways.
8-1 loss. The Cubs roll into town. The Cubs have already won 3 World Series this year. If you've been paying attention, they have the best team ever assembled. And Jake Arrieta. But in all seriousness, Jake Arrieta against Jake Peavy is, I don't know. David and Goliath is not even it's an insulting comp for how big of a mismatch that is. But, you know, Jake Peavy pitched for the Giants, and so you didn't really need much more information than that about how this game was going to go. It was going to take a miracle for the Giants to beat Jake Arrieta, and of course that miracle did not come. I guess the miracle was he only pitched 7 innings, and the Giants could have gotten to him in the first 3 innings. They had sort of an opportunity here or there to make it happen. But when Jake Peavy can't even last 2 innings, it doesn't matter. And he just looked like batting practice again. And credit to the Cubs, they're amazing. But it's kind of tough. I want to really bury Jake Peavy. It's easy to do. But I really do want to say that Jake Arrieta, the Giants are not beating him. He looks incredible and terrifying, and it scares me to think about him. And if I watch highlights of this game, I will weep in the corner. He is a scary dude.
I will say, in a way, it was a blessing for Peavy to be the one to face Arrieta, because the Giants would have had no chance in a Peavy start, and the Giants would have had no chance in an Arrieta start. So why not just combine them in one game? Because that's only one guaranteed loss instead of 2.
That is an excellent point, Doug. Doug Brazzoni just bailed out the Giants in the most beautiful way. Bochy, you son of a, you genius. Oh, man. But, I mean, Peavy didn't even have a strikeout, which is what they've sort of been able to hang their hats on. He had two walks and gave up seven hits. And it felt like he gave up, that's, you know, nine total, you know, walks and hits. That seemed like he gave up nine home runs. Literally every time they made contact, I thought it was going to go into the cove. And I don't even know that. The other part I want to point out about this game is that the Giants were hitting the ball sort of hard in the beginning, and the Cubs, how good are the Cubs? You know, Jason Hayward is not playing offensively, not really having a great season, but he made a catch that's got to be in the top, it's easily in the top 10 of AT&T Park catches, and wound up sort of folding himself against the wall in Triples Alley to make a that probably one of the hardest hit balls Denard Span's ever going to hit as a Giant, and it gets caught. But just great defense by the Cubs in the first five innings that really was just snuffing out any possibility of any rallies forming for the Giants whatsoever. So that didn't help.
that was not ideal. Yeah. I will say about Hayward's catch, it's kind of a relief because when you saw how he got injured, your immediate thought is it's a head injury because it looked like he ran into the wall head first.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought it was like his arm for sure, the way I saw it.
Really?
Yeah, that's how I saw it. But it didn't look good.
Like a minor hip injury, right?
No, yeah. Or I just thought like, oh, he's like fractured his shoulder or his arm or his ribs, like, which is, you know, extremely painful and very dangerous. He could have punctured a lung. I don't know. It didn't look good, though. It looked really bad.
He could have gotten dengue fever.
That's right. Isn't that where, yeah, that's where the dengue fever is stuck at AT&T Park if you're standing in the wrong spot. And this was also a game where Jake Arrieta was the one who drives in, who gets the scoring started. So, like, that's not fair.
Or is it? Because that would be a theme during this series.
Right. That's true. But, I mean, at that point, it's like, oh, and he's good with the bat. But Jake Arrieta is sort of, he is the poster child. I think there are Giants players we could come up with, maybe if we sat and thought about it, but typically this is sort of, you don't want to lose a good player to another team or trade them or whatever, because this is sort of what you fear if you're a fan of any team. Like, so, you know, the Orioles give up on Jake Arrieta and the Cubs snatch him, they trade for him, and then they're like, well, we saw something the Orioles either are incapable of seeing or never cared to see. We want you to do more of that. And then Jake Arrieta becomes maybe better than Clayton Kershaw. Yeah. And it's sort of that, well, that's what happened when Jason Schmidt came over to the Giants. You know, they're like, hey, you have a great changeup. Why don't the Pirates have you throw it more? Throw it more. And he's like, okay, they told me not to. And then he's a Cy Young candidate. And, you know, it's just sort of one of those things, like, this is what you fear happens. I don't think there's really any Giants in this century where that's really been a deep concern. I think it's always a fear of a fan base. I'm sure on McCovey Chronicles, I and certainly many others in the comments have had that fear about certain players. But generally, the Giants have been pretty good, I'm knocking on wood, of avoiding that fate.
Right. I mean, so the one that Giants fans are scarred about is Francisco Liriano, of course, who went in the Pruszynski trade.
So that's the only one that's in the century. So there we go. That is the big one.
and then to a minor extent this year, Adam Duvall is having a great year. They traded him for Mike Leake.
Yeah.
But the Giants wouldn't have had a place for Adam Duvall. They never tried him in the outfield. And I mean, to an extent that is, they didn't see what the Reds saw, which is that he could play there. Defensive metrics have him good there. And he's hit eight homers because he could always homer. But he was, you know, he was blocked with the Giants, and that's sort of how these trades work, that sometimes you'll trade guys and, you know, your team doesn't see the way for them to be successful major leaguers. And if that's what they become, then it's easy for the fan base to get down on that trade. But maybe a guy just isn't going to succeed in one place.
Well, the Liriano trade just stills all the way sort of a head scratcher, even though there's sound logic behind it. It's sort of, I always come back to, maybe I've already said this on this podcast, but I've certainly said it on the site, and that is, I still don't understand that you trade all that to upgrade your offense at the catching position. Like, to me, that seems like, but you know, you look at AJ Pierzynski's numbers heading into that season. You know, he was one of the best offensive players, period, in baseball. And so, if you're getting that upgrade at catcher, you know, you're giving up a lot to get it. But there's certainly some reasoning behind it. It was just an odd choice because he was arbitration eligible, and so it's like it was a big haul. And you know, Liriano has been great. If the Giants had had him all this time, would they have won the World Series sooner? I doubt it. So I think it all worked out. Yeah. And you know, the Orioles since they've traded, you know, they've been good in that span where they traded Arrieta, you know? So it hurts. They certainly need a frontline starting pitcher, but it doesn't seem, it just didn't seem like he was going to get that opportunity. Now he's absolutely terrorizing the National League. Absolutely. He is terrifying. And I've watched many of his starts, and I get the same sense of, like, the feeling I get watching him pitch, like, after the third inning when he's just locking it in, is the feeling I got when the Joker's music started playing in The Dark Knight. Like, my stomach starts to turn, and I'm like, I don't want to see what's going to happen here. This is just going to be a mess. I don't want any part of this. And then his beard that makes him look like a Hall of Presidents animatronic character. It's just, he's deeply unsettling. And then he was interviewed on the Fox, or on ESPN last night, and he was wearing sunglasses, and he just looked like he'd killed several people that morning. Like, he's a hitman. I don't know. So I'm giving Jake Arrieta a lot of credit, but since the Cubs are our new overlords, it makes sense to kiss up to them a little bit.
Right. I, for one, hail our new Cub overlords.
Yes. And, you know, after that 8-1 beatdown, you know, the series is, the sweep is on. Matt Cain. Yeah,
they've got John Lester coming up against Matt Cain. John Lester's ERA is like -8.
That's right.
Matt Cain's ERA is 4,000.
That's right. When John Lester throws a strike, it takes away a run your team had scored that season. That's it. Every strike. So, and that didn't happen, folks. The Giants pulled out a victory, 5-3. And I would say pull out a victory because the runs are capable of scoring. The Cubs are capable of scoring runs in bunches. The Giants held them to single runs in the innings that they scored. And that was the bullpen that where it really started to get shaky because, Doug, I think Matt Cain is back. I think he's back.
Don't say it.
He pitched six innings and struck out five. And he had thrown 105 pitches, so that's why he doesn't go out for the seventh. Or he hit, though, because the Giants have 70 pitchers and nobody on the bench. But this was actually a game coming into it where... So Matt Cain wins the game for the Giants. His first win in over a year, I should point out. And the Giants woke up that morning to the news that they're starting left fielder and their starting right fielder both had hamstring injuries. I wonder what was going on between the two of them, huh? And so no Angel Pagan, no Hunter Pence, and so Bruce Bochy had to improvise. And I think, Doug, he trolled Joe Madden, quirky Joe Madden, pretty hard by starting Kelby Tomlinson in left field.
Yeah.
And batting him third. This is something that really happened. I'm not making it up. This is not... And when Kelby Tomlinson, Kelby Tomlinson had a great at bat in the first inning. It ended in a flyout. It was a 9-pitch at bat. But then his next at bat in the third inning, I believe he bunted. He's the third place hitter, and he bunted Joe Panic over to third base after Joe Panic doubled. This really happened, everybody. I'm not making any of this up. So, and so that was Kelby Tomlinson's day in a nutshell. He had two walks as well. He had a good game, and he didn't look Mike Morse in the. I would say he looked somewhere between like Mike Morse and Travis Ishikawa in left field, somewhere in that. Right. In that, I don't want to give him too much credit, but that was a pretty fantastic Bruce Bochy going like, well, we may not even win this series, so let's just get weird with it. Throw his hands up, like, let's just see if weird baseball happens kind of move, and it paid off.
That's why Bruce Bochy's going to the Hall of Fame, because when he puts Kelby Tomlinson in left field, it's not luck when the Giants win. That's skill.
That was all part of the plan.
He knew how to throw off Quirky Joe. He said, oh, you've got glasses? We've got someone with glasses, too. Eat it.
And since since the visitors' dugout, Joe Madden's looking at those glasses for a lot of the game.
Yeah,
that's all he sees. And he goes, and Joe Madden's thinking the whole time, are those like mine? Are those the same kind? Where did he get those? He's not really that. Those are not prescription. He's wearing those for show, like these. That's all. That's what Joe Madden was thinking.
Yeah,
but I should point out that the scoring in earnest really got started by Matthew Thomas Kane for the Giants. So this was in a lot of ways it was sort of a reversal of the game before. The Cubs starter he actually made it through the second inning, but John Lester got knocked out early. He was out in the third inning on 75 pitches after giving up 5 runs and walking 3. And he gave up Buster Posey jumped all over the slider he hung. And it was a beautiful sight to behold because Buster Posey hitting a home run is sadly becoming a rare thing these days. But the Giants basically were patient. They were patient against Arrieta. It just didn't matter. But it was nice to see that it carried over to this game. And they were able, knocking Lester out of the game early and getting a big lead. Matt Kane is back because he was able to hold on to it. There is no issues in the fourth and fifth innings, which have been Matt Cain's, soft spots, if you really want to wonder if he's back or not. But Cain kept hitters off balance all day, and he was I'm cribbing liberally from my post-game recap, but he was able to, get a lot of swinging misses. He was able to get pop-ups off of his fastball, and he was able to get batters to chase away. And the Cubs, they make you work. He threw a lot of pitches, and he was able to get through that and challenge them and get them out in the Matt Cain way. And so that's why, to me, it looks like he's back, because he's essentially added to what he's been flashing in spurts earlier this year, and he's putting it together, 3 starts in a row.
Yeah, he's been looking a lot like Matt Cain lately, which is, like, not even from an on-field perspective, not just because he's having success, but just because, man, it's fun to watch Matt Cain pitch when he's good.
And it was like his first hit in 2 years.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It was his first extra base hit, I think, since 2013. It was his first, he had an RBI last year, but it was a sacrifice hit. So it was his first RBI hit, I think, since 2014. It's been a while since Matt Cain has been able to positively contribute to the Giants. And this was a game, his last 3 starts, this being the third of those, it really feels like, yes, Matt Cain, yes, all caps, Matt Cain. And it's what the Giants need. I'm sure that they were thinking that they weren't going to get a Jake Peavy this bad.
Right.
That they're that now there's sort of these extremes going on. Now he's starting to really stick out, but not to bury Jake Peavy anymore. Matt Cain having such a positive start against clearly, the Cubs. I mean, folks, it's the Cubs. They're going to be our new dictatorship. We just have to get used to the Cubs world order, and Matt Cain being able to punch him in the mouth is wonderful. It was a relief, and it gave the Giants the chance to win a series against these same Cubs, and they were throwing out their best starter, which I said at the beginning, well, it helps with Madison Bumgarner's pitching. And Madison Bumgarner, I think The Giants won Sunday night 1-0, which I said before, most exciting type of win. If you're going to pitch a shutout 1-0, why not have all that drama? All that clawing of your eyes out. Why can't they score? And oh my God, this is all they're going to get. and it was Madison Bumgarner who drove in the run. So to me, this is like the ace of ace type of games. And the whole theme of the series was pitchers doing it themselves this whole weekend. Do the Giants win either of their games without their pitchers driving in the runs and holding the other team down? No. And then, same with the Cubs. Arrieta was one who broke it open for them. But I want you to talk about the Madison Bumgarner start. I have thoughts, but you've heard all mine so far. So what are your thoughts, Doug?
I mean, mostly just that he was fantastic. He was the ace. It was like you were watching him in the postseason. It's like he was just showing up to tell the Cubs, hey, you know how you've already won not only the offseason World Series, but also the spring training World Series and the April World Series? Well, this is the May World Series, and you're going against me.
Yeah.
And there was no getting to him. The Cubs didn't get an extra base hit against him. He gave up basically nothing, 3 hits and 2 walks in almost 8 innings, struck out 6. And the most impressive part was probably that he recovered after having a long first inning. Because it was, right. I think, 29 pitches in the first inning. And he came back, and after that, there was just nothing. You know, there was he gave up a single to David Ross in the second, but it wasn't, there wasn't any real thought that he was going to give up anything. It was sort of like a less dramatic, and it's a little bit of an extreme comparison, but if you remember Tim Lincecum in game one of the division series in 2010, that thought that, they're just not going to get to him. It was a very similar thought. And then he kind of compounded it by driving in the only run himself, which, ha, 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 the DH sucks.
Yeah. We might spend an entire Croncast talking about that one day, folks, because really, I get it why people don't want to watch that, but they're not getting why it's enjoyable to watch pitchers hit. That first inning for Bumgarner, he had Chris Bryant 0-2, and then his next pitch, which would have been the third out if he could have put Bryant away. But then his next pitch after the 0-2 hit Bryant in the foot. And then after that, the inning started to kind of get away from him a little bit. And the Giants didn't quite help him out defensively. I'm actually kind of blanking on what happened. There was a single to left. But in any case, he was going great, and then he would have had a 12 or 13 pitch inning, and then it sort of snowballed. But then, yes, he really locked it down and was able, I think he had 39 pitches after 2 innings, which, not great, but he started to stabilize it pretty quickly. And the Giants going to the bullpen, to me, is still one of the most terrifying moves they can make. But Guerin is able to come in and have, get his one batter and get out of it. And Santiago Casilla having a clean ninth again, because he is really good. Even against the left-handed hitter, he still gave up hard contact. Let's not forget. There is still that reality of we should definitely watch that, continue watching that. But it felt very much, as you said, like a playoff Madison Bumgarner start. And because it's the Cubs, it's all any major league team, if you only have one run, if you can only score one run and you've got to make that hold, it's going to be tough enough. But against the Cubs, holding them to 3 hits, I'm trying to look at now the other base runners that they had, and 2 walks for the game. So they had 5 base runners. They had 6 base runners the whole game with the hit by pitch. And so you don't think, or you look at that and you're like, all right, the Giants should be able to keep things under control. It's the Cubs. Bryant could have, after that hit by pitch, the next swing of the bat off of Zobrist could have been a home run. That kind of thing. That's the kind of team they are. And instead, that didn't happen. And the Giants beat the Cubs in a series. Holy cow.
they did. The other thing we should mention from this game is Denard Span's very
impressive, unimpressive catch where he kind of went back on it and, you know, changed his route 18 times and eventually jumped up and got it. It was very athletic. Certainly a ball that I don't catch.
No.
A ball that a lot of, I mean, I'm sure there are plenty of major league center fielders who don't catch it, but it was also one that looked a little bit better than it really was because he just kept spinning around.
And if Angel Pagan had taken that route and played it the way Span did, Angel Pagan would have wound up in McCovey Cove. It would have wound up completely different. Span's on-base percentage is at 359 after the game. It was actually it was 366 heading into last night's game, and he had an 0-for-4. So not fantastic, but 366 I saw in the telecast was his highest since 2009. And I think we had talked about Denard Span's on-base percentage, and if he's not hitting doubles, he needs to get on base a lot more. He has a 694 OPS, not fantastic by any stretch. 359, not a bad on-base percentage, but for your leadoff guy, you'd like it to be a little bit better. It's unfair, Doug. I'm about to make an unfair comparison, if you can believe it. It's unfair to compare him to the Cubs leadoff hitter, but for comparison's sake, Dexter Fowler's OPS is 968, and his on-base percentage is 435. So, you know, just to give a little bit of you know, why the Cubs might be such a terrifying offensive juggernaut, their leadoff hitter is hitting 435, and Ben Zobrist, who's not classically a number four hitter, but their number four hitter has a 438 on base percentage. So, you know, just they have guys who are really lighting it up in that regard. And the Giants counter with Brandon Belt, who is great. And that's really the only guy they have who's got an over 400 on base percentage. I'm not really going to whine about it because they're winning, and we know what the Giants' MO is. They prefer contact to getting on base because they believe that contact leads to more scoring chances. So I'm fine with it. I get it. I understand. But you just on base wise, you like make that comparison. And so, you know, Span, I would say that to his credit, he hasn't looked completely terrible. So you can kind of hope or maybe think that things are only going to get better for him as the season goes on. That's my thoughts. So.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like he's also been better in the last few weeks than he was over the first few. So hopefully that's something that'll continue too, because he is coming off that hip injury that we don't know how much that's still affecting him.
Right. Okay. So who do you have, or what do you have as the best game of the week?
I'm going to say that Sunday night game. I mean, 1-0 against the best team in the NL. And Bumgarner's on at the plate, and it's a 1-0 game, and it was a Sunday night game, the first time they've won a Sunday night game since, I believe, the Taft administration.
That's right. It was the Taft administration, and ESPN was actually like one of those public works projects.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good choice. I'm going to go with Matt Cain in the Saturday game because Matt Cain is back. I actually am careful. I don't want to anoint him too much because we've all seen what that's done to my beloved Matt Duffy and to some extent Derek Law. So I don't want to say, you know, too much, but that it was so encouraging and exciting to see Matt Cain not only get his first win in over a year, but do it against a team like that. So that's my choice. It seems like the worst game of the week is pretty obvious.
Jake Peavy.
Yeah, Jake Peavy, and then just Jake Arrieta creating nightmares for people. Could you imagine the arrested development he'd create if he pitched against like a little league team? because he seems like he'd be that kind of a jerk. Like during the off season or like when he's retired, he'd be a drifter going around from like park to park, just throwing perfect games against,
just making children feel bad about themselves.
That's right. Like he hears one of the kids after he strikes one out on three pitches and the kid goes back to the dugout crying, like, what am I supposed to do? And then Arrieta stops and turns and he looks and he goes, should go home and think about your life. That's what I imagine Jake Arrieta is going to do when he's 43 years old. No family, no connections, just off the grid, ruining lives with perfect games. Who do you have for the player of the week?
So honorable mention to Brandon Crawford, who had a really good offensive week, a really good defensive week too.
Oh man, his Sunday night game was the Giants. We didn't even talk about that.
Yeah.
The Giants sort of returned the favor of the Friday night game and then some, just in terms of how sharp their defense was. And that certainly helped Madison Bumgarner look like a playoff performance. The Giants played their playoff level defense sort of in this game.
Yeah, it was pretty much every player on the infield had some highlight. Whether, you know, for Belt, it was scooping a ball that Bumgarner himself threw really badly to first. Crawford had a couple great plays. Posey had the one. Duffy had that diving stop. Posey had the one in the Cubs dugout.
Right.
I mean, it was just defensive highlight after highlight.
Yep. And Panic had to make a lot of quick plays on the shifts.
Yeah, that's right.
And so he looked really good doing that.
So Crawford's the honorable mention, but player of the week has to be Bumgarner, who pitched 16 and two thirds innings, one complete game. The other one was 7 2/3 scoreless against the best offense in baseball. He drove in the winning run in that game. He was just remarkable this week.
And 17 strikeouts total.
Yeah.
I think it's a great choice. I will co-sign both of those. I can't, in terms of another honorable mention, I mean, Joe Panik had a pretty solid week too, but I would say Brandon Crawford's definitely was better. One thing I want to, now we've talked about all the good stuff, I want to like point out something that Grant pointed out not too long ago, that Gregor Blanco is getting kind of his customary, oh, a guy's injured, I'm going to play for 2 weeks playing time. And Gregor Blanco has yet to sort of be that, oh, Gregor Blanco, the best backup in baseball level. So we don't know how long Hunter Pence's injury is going to linger, but certainly when Blanco took over for Pagan, he didn't really light it up. So hopefully, here's the Gregor Blanco this next week, being a little more Gregor Blanco-esque. I wanted to point that out just because I was looking at the box score and his was standing out and it reminded me that it's like, oh, he's not playing too well.
Right.
But Kelby Tomlinson, to his credit, I think what helped get him batting third was that the Giants are liking his at-bats when he's coming to pinch hit or in his little bit of playing time, that he's putting together good at-bats and he's hitting the ball with authority when he is making contact. So it doesn't take long to turn it around because you remember the first 3 weeks of the season, it's like, oh, Kelby Tomlinson, he needs to go back to single A. so it doesn't take long to turn around.
And Kelby's kind of settling into that bench role. Like, I remember when Brett Pill first came up, Mike Kruko talked about how he was a great guy to have off the bench because his swing wouldn't get any worse, you know, if it was several days between at bats or a week between at bats. And that turned out to not be true about Brett Pill. But, you know, Tomlinson might be a better fit for just that kind of bench role.
Well, I mean, and Mike Kruko absolutely giving ups to a player with, you know, who's clearly bad. It's not surprising.
Unprecedented.
Yes.
Yeah.
So looking ahead, you might think it's sort of a ho-hum NL West week. It's home to the Padres for three. Then they have an off day on Thursday. And then it's in Colorado this weekend. I don't know, it seems like a pretty crummy Memorial Day weekend playing the Rockies. But that'll be it. And then it'll be sort of can the Giants put together another run of this rotation? And hopefully, I mean, you'd like to see that happen again. But Jake Peavy is going to go in that Wednesday afternoon game against the Padres. So Matt Cain gets to go back to Colorado, which I know he loves pitching there, and then it'll be Bumgarner and then Cueto. So it'll be an interesting weekend for sure. The Giants are in first place right now, commandingly, and the second place team is the Rockies. So it'll be an interesting week for sure. Let's get to our Twitter questions.
Absolutely. So as always, we had fantastic Twitter questions.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic Twitter questions every week here on mm-hmm. the McCovey Croncast. The first one is from Jameson at Side Out Par. The question is, with Timmy off the table, whom do we pine for next as the solution to all our inadequacies?
Well, Matt Cain's sort of answering that. And I think, I mean, I said before, I think it's better if one of them comes through. If Matt Cain is back, let's say, that if the Giants really just have to figure out, salvage one spot in the rotation, then their internal options, I feel, are going to be enough. But the whole problem has been that they're the Titanic taking on water at this point with two rotation spots that are just completely untenable. But you only have to deal with one. Now you can throw Heston at the problem. You can throw Suarez at the problem. You can piggyback. You can plan. You know, they've got 13 guys in the bullpen. You know, they can make that work in some way. So I think moving Peavy to the fifth spot in the rotation is better, and then figuring out a way to either piggyback his starts or piggyback or replace him and have someone else. That's a much better situation. But Peavy's going to get six or seven more starts.
Well, yeah, I mean, Peavy, the Giants kind of, Bruce Bochy made a statement recently about how that, you know, they think that he's close to turning it around, which is wrong. He's not close to turning it around.
No. Yeah.
But yeah, so they seem to be committed to him for a little while now.
Yeah. Well, remember, I had predicted at least eight more starts for him.
You had. Yes. I was totally off in that. I thought, you know, next bad start, he's out. Then he had a bad start. Then he had two good starts. And now he's around for a while.
Yeah. And I really think that, you were bad against the Cubs. Oh, well, like, I think that gives him a pass, as though it's not indicative of a pattern we've seen already against any quality of team. So, but, you know, he has a good start against, say, the Dodgers at some point, or let's say he has a great start on Wednesday. I it's just one of those things. And against the Padres, you never know. So, My whole thinking is they're not worried about the rotation for the time being. If Matt Cain, let's say his next two starts are at least as good as his Cubs start, which, you know, he went six innings and he did fine. But if he is able to sort of hang in there and do six innings and three earned runs or whatever, I think they'll be okay with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So our next question is from Rob Hainer at Robert Hainer. The question is, what fashion tips do you have? That's a good question, because we're both very, very fashionable people. We're well known for it. That's really right. Why Grant has us on the site for our fashion sense.
That's right. I mean, my Twitter avatar is of a hot dog hat, or a guy wearing a hot dog hat, paper hat. So I'm a big advocate of paper hats. fashion tips in general, I mean, my thing is, if you can get away with it, be as comfortable as you can at all times without wearing sweatpants. that makes no sense, but that's really what it comes down to. I feel like sweatpants are for gyms and indoor and not being around many people.
I think that's fair. I generally also try to be comfortable. The only real rule I have is that if I'm wearing blue jeans, I try not to wear a shirt that matches that blue too closely, because then it looks like I'm wearing a Texas tuxedo.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a great... I co-sign that 100%. I don't know. Oh, also, one thing, unless you're, like, really overweight, and that is, like, a doctor has said you're really overweight, try to wear tighter-fitting clothes. I know it seems counterintuitive, but I think... when you see big people wear, I'm going to say guys, you know what? I'm not talking about women. I'm just saying guys. When you see big guys in, like, their football jersey tents that they wear to cover that up, it's just not flattering. And it's not about, like, looking sexy all the time, but it's simply, like, I think generally speaking, people are just more like, oh, that's their shape. And I think it's better that than some sort of like, tent, like a church revival tent that people wear over themselves to get rid of all their contours and shapes. So I say be comfortable, but I also say, like, you know, if you're a large, wear a large. Don't wear the extra large. Like, just wear your size, especially as you get older. It's just better. When you're a kid, no one look, you know, I also live in LA. I think that's kind of what's factoring in here. And that is, like, just the closer you are to yourself, the way you look or the way that you are or want to be, you're going to be more relaxed. And that's what people feed off of. So that's it.
Okay.
That's
it. And then that's it.
I'm now deeply, deeply uncomfortable talking about this. Oh, well, actually, one other thing. When I go home to the Bay Area, the amount of people wearing sports paraphernalia as their primary clothing, even when they're not going to games and such, is off the charts. off the charts. So my suggestion is to mix it up a little bit. You don't have to go Captain America and wear a no logo baseball hat. A no logo hat. But, you know, just like, you don't always have to wear, people don't always have to wear sports licensed clothing. That's my big takeaway.
I will say I wear a lot of giant sweatshirts because I've gotten them as gifts, and that's most of the sweatshirts that I have.
Yeah. So, I would say mix it up a little bit to get something with nothing written on it.
That's harsh.
I have giant stuff that I love that's very comfortable, but, you know, I don't want to wear it everywhere because it's just like, you know, not everybody's into sports, and sometimes you go to places and you just want to wear a jacket, but, like, do you have to wear a team? Just be a little more low key. Also, like, it also, like, hijacks you by being like, oh, you're a Giants fan, not, hey, you're Doug, who all the ladies love, you know? You want that to shine out, right?
So. Well, no, I'm a modern man. I want to be nothing but an ambassador for a brand.
Okay. I take it all back. That's the most important thing, folks, for fashion. Always be branding. So, always represent a brand. All right, what else?
All right. Kristen at Christy Tipswell asked us, describe the best party you ever went to.
Okay, so I've actually given this question a lot of thought over the week.
So, okay, good.
Do you have an answer or no?
I don't.
Okay, then I'll give you time to think about it. All right.
Okay.
The best party I ever went to, and I have thought about this, was my friend's wedding reception back in 2014. And a friend of mine who I worked with when I worked on a TV show many years ago, we were both production assistants, and she's now a writer and on a show, and she and her husband, they took their first script fee that they ever got, and they used part of it to fund their wedding, which was at CBS Radford studio lot. They shoot Brooklyn Nine-Nine there. They shot Seinfeld there. They shoot a lot of stuff there. Those are the first, the only two I can think of. But their whole wedding and the reception was on the lot. And so the ceremony was on sort of their neighborhood street, which was like the Malcolm in the Middle street. And I can't think of what other streets it's been used for. But that was where the ceremony was. And then the party was on the back lot, the New York Street back lot that they had there. And it was just, you know, it was like you're on a New York street. It was beautifully decorated. They had the In-N-Out truck. They had the music, and it was sort of extravagant, but in that fun way of youth instead of the extravagant, oh, look at how wealthy we are type thing that you might expect from older people. It was basically like if you had a lot of money or if you had a lot of a big wedding budget and you wanted to have fun at your wedding, but you had to keep it local. That's what they did, and they really maximized all that. So it was a lot of fun because there was no pretenses, and it was just like go and do whatever you want, talk to people, dance, pictures, and all that stuff. And it was sort of the best version of a wedding reception I could ever think of. So that's the best party I've ever been to.
That sounds like a fun party.
It was great. Yeah, oh, they had a bridal party had a music video that they did, which was I think it was a mashup of a few songs, and they shot this on their own time. That was part of the bachelorette party things, and so this was like the debut of the thing, and it like had a fantastic production budget, and it was actually something that went viral for a little while. So it was pretty cool. It was just really cool all the way around. So.
Great.
Yeah. Yours was an Eyes Wide Shut party, I imagine.
Yeah. No, it was, I'm not allowed to tell you the names of anyone who was there. But let's just say one of them rhymed with Mulf Blitzer.
You were the only one wearing a sports coat, though. Or yeah, like a sports
team. I was wearing my Kiss the Ring sweatshirt. So.
All right. How'd you get that invite? Did you like buy a coat at Goodwill and then that invitation was accidentally left in there?
No, I saw Mr. Blitzer on the street and he just invited me. He invites people to orgies a lot, I think. Okay. Yeah. We have one last question, which is actually about sports.
Okay. I like the non-sports questions. I sound ridiculous answering them.
from Nick Stellini at Stellini Tweets, and he asked, why do the Giants place a curse on the left field position? It feels counterintuitive.
My quick answer is, well, that used to be second base. So right. Someone's got to wear it.
Yeah.
And I actually think that putting Angel Pagan there was... It works in a couple of ways. It's like, well, we know that position's cursed. Let's put our most cursed player in that position and see what happens.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, oh, he has his most productive season in a couple of years. And whether he's playing or not, like when he came back, he's still hitting the ball well.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I would say that there's a certain amount of good things you expect out of each position over the course of decades. And the Giants are still way, way ahead on left field.
That's right.
So they need to play some catch up.
Okay. So yes, if that's okay for the franchise history in wins above replacement left field there, they've got
yeah
a significant lead. Sure. I'm sure that someone's already done that article. Look, I'll have to look this up when we're done. Like, franchise position, who's got the best by wins above replacement.
Oh yeah, I'm sure that'd be interesting.
Yeah. So that's all the questions you have, because I have a couple.
That's all I saw.
Okay. This is from Scott DiGiorgio. There we go. At ScottyDG1, he asked us, if you could be any kind of batted ball, what would you be and why? Same with any type of pitched ball.
Well, for a pitched ball, I would want to be a curveball in the dirt because nobody would hit me. I'd have to hit the dirt, but that's kind of a fair trade because then I don't get hit by a bat. But if I'm going to be a batted ball, which is going to hurt no matter what, I might as well be that home run ball that Matt Kemp hit off the Western Metal Supply building. Because you know, if you're going to go out, just go out big.
Yeah, yeah. Excellent choices. Okay. If I could be any type of pitched ball, I would be Mariano Rivera's cutter. And if I could be any kind of batted ball, I would be Giancarlo Stanton home run ball. But specifically, the one he hit off of Mike Bolsinger against the Dodgers last year that went out of the stadium. Dodger Stadium.
Oof. Yeah.
Because if you're going to die, what a glorious death.
Yeah, no, that's it. That's the way to go.
I have a couple more, actually, if you have time, Doug.
Absolutely. Bring them on.
Okay. Charles Cadiz at C6 asks, Contos or Nah?
Yeah, Contos.
You're taking Contos? All right.
I mean, he had a bad return to the majors, but I think he's a good pitcher. I think he's not going to be nearly as good as he was last year. Is, you know, peripherals don't really support that. He's not truly a 220 ERA talent pitcher, but I think he's a good major league pitcher. And Bochy's going to, it'll be better for him because Bochy has Albert Suarez's arm to abuse now. So Contos might be able to be used a little more rationally, get some more rest and be more effective.
And Corey Guerin.
Yeah.
He seems, Bochy seems to be creeping up on using him a little bit more. Only because they have to lay off Law. That's another thing. They're trying to lay off of him. Okay. At Side Out Par, Jameson also asked us, Duffy politely but decisively schooled a hater on Twitter this week. question, isn't Matt Duffy the best? So the tweet in question was this doofus at Lincoln Logs _ tweeting at Matt Duffy, "You suck." That was the tweet. So, and then Matt Duffy quote tweeted in response, "Work hard and maybe you can be just like me one day." Which, you know, that's a replacement level own, but it got the job done. So.
Yeah, I mean it's not quite as good as Brendan Belt a few weeks ago, who somebody asked, "Why do you keep getting thrown out at second base?" And he responded, "Last time it was third."
That's way better. That's
yeah, but
we might have to think about doing a Giants player tweet of the week just because. Like, for example, was Johnny Cueto's Instagram with that beluga whale, was that this week? Or is that just something that someone dug up this week because they pitched
that
well?
That was this week because they were in San Diego.
Okay.
To see World.
So that to me would be this week's tweet of the week.
Yeah.
But I think Belt's comment, I think that was 2 weeks ago maybe. So that would have been that tweet. What?
Yeah.
I'm considering it now. So the Duffy one would be a contender, but I mean that, yeah. Belt's is fantastic. I don't know. I want to, if Matt Duffy is accidentally listening to this podcast, I'd like to apologize to him. I believe in you, and I know that's what's hurting.
Right.
But he's still looks solid. He doesn't look like he doesn't belong, but those hits have got to start falling a little bit. He probably needs to go the other way a little bit more again, but it's based on the pitches you get too. So
yeah, I mean, he's hit the ball hard a few times.
He's been hitting it hard, yeah.
So you kind of see that and go, oh, one of those stretches.
Yeah, and that's what happened to Panic for a while, and now those are starting to fall. So I think that's all I have. Okay, that's all of our Twitter questions for the week. Okay, so, all right. You can find me on Twitter at every6day. You can send us questions whenever. It doesn't have to be when we ask for them, Doug, right? So
no, absolutely not. We are always happy to take those questions so we can answer questions.
And suggestions you might have for games that we could play. Yeah, we'll try to get a guest in here. I think I'm gonna rope Grant in and get him to talk about the first couple of months of the season, see what he thinks about it all. So, Doug, where can they find you on Twitter if they don't know by now?
I am at Moonwalk McFly on Twitter.
That's right. And we will be back next week. Hopefully the Giants continue winning, but you know, when I hope for that, it usually means the opposite. Thanks for listening.
Thanks. Bye.